You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Lewis's last year hosting was in 2010. I'm Kelly Sloan, and you're listening to USA Headline News.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
In America, we believe in a future that is better than today. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has been working hard for their clients' futures, never taking a bailout, helping generations achieve dreams, buy homes, put their kids through college, retire how they want to. Today, Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you feel more confident about your financial future. Put the strength of a global financial leader to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your dreams and goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated. Member FINRA and SIPC.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Pat Smits, and I'm going to tell you about the weather, and then we'll get to the program, It's the Law. Well, today's been, somewhat cloudy, not a great sunny day. But tonight, it will be mostly cloudy. Tomorrow, there's about a 20% chance, really a slight chance of thunderstorms. So if you're looking for the best day of the weekend, it's going to be Sunday, because Sunday it should be sunny and a high of about 75 degrees. So great day to get out there and get out and finish up doing what we should have been doing on our lawns about a month ago. And again, Monday, if you can take off Sunday and Monday instead of Saturday and Sunday, I suggest you do it, because it should be sunny on Sunday, high of about 78 degrees. So it may be that we're getting into some nice weather. So by, partly cloudy tonight, low of about 48 degrees, so that's much better than it has been. Mostly cloudy tonight, partly cloudy tomorrow night, but should be in the 40s both nights. And then on Sunday night, it's mostly clear, and it should only get down to the low 50s. So we'll be back. We are back. And that's the weather. And so let's talk about the program. And today I'm going to be talking about certain legal news. And part of the legal news is the fact that Governor Christie's close associates, part of his administration, Bridget Kelly and Bill Baroni, have been indicted. And this is, of course, in connection with that traffic tie-up on the George Washington Bridge and what happened in Fort Lee, and because of the tie-up in the bridge and, the political reasons for it. So that... will be a case where I'm sure that they will not take an early plea bargain, and who knows what impact, if any, this will have on Governor Christie's presidential bid. So that's the latest in as far as criminal law here in New Jersey. And, of course, what this meant is that a grand jury looked at whatever evidence was presented by a prosecutor, and based on that, they indicted. Of course, with respect to criminal law, people are not guilty until they're found guilty. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that someone's innocent just because they're not found guilty. But what it does mean is that they're not found guilty. And, of course, in the criminal, it has to be beyond a reasonable doubt. And you can only be found guilty if the jury decides that beyond a reasonable doubt you are, in fact, guilty. There's a lower threshold of proof in civil cases, so that the threshold of proof in criminal cases is pretty high. Well, what else is happening in the news? Well, one of the things that, one more warning that people should be very careful about getting involved in marital affairs is a case that has just been reported. And excuse me, this is not a published case, so it's not precedential. But in this case, the defendant, who is a man, appealed from a final restraining order entered against him. And this, of course, is under the Prevention of Domestic Violence Act. And his appeal focused on the trial court's finding that he had committed the predicate act of harassment. Now, what does that mean? Well, if someone is charged with domestic violence, in addition to the specific facts that occurred based on the complaint, so those specific facts, the victim has to also talk about previous acts of harassment or one of the other, assault, harassment, or one of the other things. And I'm going to just put a commercial on for a minute so I can get some water. Sorry about that.
I'm Dave Lang with Insight Financial Services and a proud member of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Even in this difficult economy, our family of companies, including Insight Financial, Premier College Funding, and the Insight Tax and Accounting Group, have grown and prospered. I believe that our participation in all of the opportunities that the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce offers to its members strongly contributes to our success.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Sorry about that. I started talking about an appeal from a final restraining order. The case in the appellate division is LS versus JP. But in any event, what the defendant said is that he focused in this case on the alleged prior incidences. Oh, what was that? What was the harassment? Well, first of all, it's the case itself is both the plaintiff and the defendant were both married to other people when they had a love affair that lasted approximately 1 year. So during that time, they exchanged over 31,000 text messages. So this wasn't just a few, 31,000 text messages. Now, over time, their respective spouses, as well as the woman's son, became aware of the affair. And she contended that at some point in May of 2013, she made it clear that she wanted to end all communication with the defendant, with her paramour. She also contended that despite her wishes, he kept trying to communicate with her and harassing her. Now, he argued, on the other hand, that until she filed charges against him on May 29th, 2013, they had an ongoing relationship, although he admitted it was tumultuous. So in this case, there was no finding about the credibility of the parties. And this is the appellate division said that there was no finding made by the trial judge about the credibility of the parties. And the appellate division said, more importantly, there was no finding that the defendant intended to harass or annoy the plaintiff. Now, that's part of the statute. In other words, one party could say that somebody harassed him or her, but there has to be an intention to harass or annoy, and that's required by the statute. So since that intention is required, a required step before entering a final restraining order. In this case, the appellate division reversed and remanded the case to the trial court for review and further fact-finding. So in this case, the man was saying, hey, I certainly wasn't had any intention to harass her or annoy her. As far as he was concerned, the affair had continued until the charges were filed. So I'm sure that neither party in this case is going to win. But it also says, and it's important, that if someone is trying to break off a relationship, it's very important that the other person not persist. Because at what point does it become harassment? And there are many cases where, in fact, a similar fact pattern has, in fact, been found to be harassment and upheld by the appellate division. However, in this case, because the judge did not talk about the credibility of the parties, and it was important because, in fact, did she tell him early in May 2013 that she wanted to stop all communication, or that was her story, or his story was that until she filed the charges on May 29th, they had an ongoing relationship. So the facts in a case are important, and it's also important that the judges do what's required under the statute, and that is make findings of fact and conclusions of law. And in this case, for example, if the judge had said she was more credible and that despite his testimony, he found that the defendant had an intention to annoy or harass, then the case, his decision to enter a final restraining order would almost always have been upheld by the appellate division. So that's the case that I wanted to talk about, because what people don't understand is that anyone who's had a relationship, not anyone, adults who have had a relationship, they don't have to be married. They don't have to be the same sex. In fact, it can even be family members, can file restraining orders. But what's also important in those circumstances, especially with relationships of unmarried people, is that if someone says, I'm done, the other person really needs to back off. So I'll be back after just shortly. I'm going to take another drink of water here. So I'll just play a couple commercials.
You're listening to 100inChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@100in-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy 100in, buy local. Visit www.100inchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming. The 100in County Chamber of Commerce is proud to hold its second annual 100in County Community Day on Saturday, June 13th from 12:30 to 6:30 at the 100in County Fairgrounds in Ringo's. We thank our presenting sponsor, 100in Healthcare, and the 100in County Freeholders. Come get involved, be a vendor, an exhibitor, if you're a business or an organization. Come get before thousands of folks on this great day. Contact the Chamber at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at 100inchamber.org. Once again, join us on 100in County Community Day, Saturday, June 13th. Get involved with your community today.
Okay, we're back. I'm Pat Smits. The program, It's the Law. For those of you who don't know me, I'm an attorney here in 100in County. I limit my practice to family law, and I guess that's one of the reasons why I was so interested in this domestic violence case, LS versus JP, because that's one of the things that I do. But I like to talk about general legal news on this program if I'm not if I don't have a guest, and that's what I'm doing today. So I earlier mentioned that there's been indictments of Bridget Kelly and Bill Baroni. I'm not sure whether or not David Wildstein, he had been accused of helping to orchestrate the abrupt closures of these local access lanes to the George Washington Bridge. Apparently, he is set to plead guilty to unknown charges. In fact, he was supposed to be in court today in federal court in Newark. I don't know if that happened, but he, in fact, had agreed, apparently, to plead guilty to some charges, and I'm sure that what they've done is they've downgraded the charges. And if we remember the incident, it goes back to September 2013. So, obviously, Bridget Kelly and Bill Baroni did not agree to take any kind of a plea deal. And that is what happens in cases like this. The prosecutors negotiate with the defendant's attorneys, and in many cases, not in all cases, to see if they can work out and agree on some kind of a plea where the person pleads guilty, perhaps to lower charges, and you know, certainly doesn't face the time that they'll face if they try the case and are found guilty. Now, there's also the justices. This is a New Jersey Supreme Court are considering whether or not a Bergen County man who allegedly conspired to firebomb Jewish facilities and threatened to kill a prosecutor and two judges, whether that case should be heard by a judge from another county or transferred to another county altogether. So the New Jersey Supreme Court heard arguments on April 28th, and that was on the appeal by the Bergen County Prosecutor's Office to overturn an appellate division ruling barring judges from the county from presiding over the trial. And the trial of his name is A-A-K-A-S-H, Dalal, D-A-L-A-L. So that is something that the New Jersey Supreme Court is going to decide. And there are two things that they have to decide: whether a judge from another county should be sent to Bergen County to hear the case, or whether the case should be transferred to another county. If I had to predict, I would predict that, in fact, the Supreme Court will transfer. And that is what the appellate division ruled. So in this case, the Supreme Court, I believe, is likely to confirm the appellate division decision barring judges from the county from presiding over the trial. And it makes sense. And it makes sense because there will be certainly a suggestion of prejudice in light of the fact that he's allegedly threatened to kill the prosecutor and judges in that particular county. So that often happens, or not often, but cases are, in fact, transferred from one county to another. There are cases in Hunterdon County that are transferred to Mercer County, for example. Now, there's the proof, there was proof for publication, a case where the plaintiff, and this was a putative class action case, sought recovery under the Consumer Fraud Act. And it's really that's an important act for anybody in business to know, or at least look at, become familiar, because in this case it was for alleged violation of the Consumer Fraud Act relating to the defendant's sale and servicing of her medical malpractice insurance policy, among other claims. And the court dismissed those claims and held the medical malpractice insurance policies were not subject to Consumer Fraud Act. So that was a decision where the decision in that case, Kahn versus Coventus, this is a trial judge decision, but it was in fact approved for publication, which means that anyone else can use whatever is in that case as precedent. And that's what makes it important, more important than the the cases that are not approved for publication. Now, there's also a criminal law case that was approved for publication, and that is State versus Nantambu. And what this case is, again, this was a Superior Court case, and when considering the whether or not it's admissible, a recording containing a partial omission, the trial court must employ a two-part analysis. First, the court must determine if the omission is unduly prejudicial, and that the court has to determine that after conducting an objective analysis focused on the evidentiary purposes for which the recording is being offered. So, in fact, this is an appellate division decision. And then if the trial court, in its discretion, finds the omission unduly prejudicial, it must then consider whether it renders all or only some of the recording untrustworthy, and then has to suppress only that position deemed untrustworthy. So this is, the best thing, obviously, if you're using a recording, is to use the entire recording rather than just trying to get excerpts from it. So that the justices of the Supreme Court are also considering whether leaving a child in a car is abuse. And this is, a significant finding because in this case, the New Jersey Supreme Court has taken a case and is mulling over whether a parent can be found to have committed abuse and neglect if the parent leaves a toddler in a locked car to run to a nearby store for a few minutes. And the lawyer representing the parent, this is a mother known only in the case, as ED-O, and she asked the court to overturn an appeals court ruling that upheld a finding of abuse and neglect after she left her sleeping 19-month-old child in a car with the doors locked and the windows were cracked open and the engine running, and she left the child for 5 to 10 minutes when she went into the dollar store in South Plainfield. This goes back to May 6, 2009. I mean, the moral of this is you never leave a child in a car. And I know it's very difficult for parents because they think they can just run in for a minute. The child is sleeping. And, of course, to get a 19-month-old, wake them up, take them in the store, etc. But they will be charged. In fact, someone will call the police if they see a child in a car, and especially a 19-month-old who's in a car, and although the car door may be locked, the fact that the engine was running, I don't know why the mother would think that was helpful. Certainly not. And in any event, this case is now going all the way up to the Supreme Court because the trial judge found that the child was abused and neglected based on the facts. The appellate court agreed, and for some reason the Supreme Court felt that it was an important enough case to take it up to the Supreme Court. So that's, we don't know when we'll get the decision on that. It will be some months. Usually it takes the court some months to issue a decision. But that will be an important decision. Excuse me. The appeals court, the appellate division, has upheld a dismissal of a lawsuit claiming a New Jersey law firm committed legal malpractice when it sued a dentist for objecting to a settlement in a class action against insurers over allegedly fraudulent claims payment practices. So what happened is the appellate division dismissed the suit against the law firm, relying largely on the fact that the firm no longer was representing the dentist when it sued him for allegedly attempting to thwart a settlement with Delta Dental. So this is was dismissed. Good news for lawyers, because what happens often is that when a lawyer sues for fees, for example, there's a counterclaim for malpractice, even though there's been no malpractice. Now, another, I hate to constantly pick on attorneys, but there was another New Jersey lawyer. He had admitted to scaring real estate investors into hiring him with bogus claims of a pending criminal tax investigation. And he's been sentenced to by a federal judge to 27 months in prison. That was U.S. District Judge Ann Thompson sitting in Trenton. And this is for extortion. And that was what the sentence was for. So we'll be right back after the news break, and we'll give you the news break and a couple, a couple words from our sponsors who I hope you listen to and, deal with our sponsors. These are local businesses. Most of them are members of the chamber, and it's important to do business locally whenever possible.
USA Headline News. I'm Kelly Sloan. Manslaughter, not rendering aid, and other charges have been filed against six Baltimore police officers in the death of Freddie Gray. Five are already in custody. Maryland State Attorney Marilyn Mosby held a news conference today where she said Gray's death was a homicide.
Following transport from Baker Street, Mr. Gray suffered a severe and critical neck injury as a result of being handcuffed, shackled by his feet, and unrestrained inside of the BPD wagon.
Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake says she will not tolerate unacceptable behavior by police.
To those of you who wish to engage in brutality, misconduct, racism, and corruption, let me be clear. There is no place in the Baltimore City Police Department for you.
People in the Baltimore neighborhood where Gray lived are celebrating by cheering and honking horns. Law enforcement officials are on high alert as more protests are expected. This is USA Headline News.
If you have trouble remembering names, if problems with focus or mental clarity are affecting your work, or if you have an aging parent in mental decline, please listen closely to this important message. A team of neuroscientists with the University of Massachusetts Lowell has developed Perceptive, a breakthrough nutritional supplement. Independent research funded by accredited organizations like the Alzheimer's Association, National Institute on Aging, and the National Science Foundation shows that Perceptive is highly effective at improving cognitive performance, memory recall, and focus, and it may help reduce cognitive decline due to aging. In as little as 2 weeks, subjects taking Perceptive reported dramatic improvements in memory and clarity. Perceptive is now available through this exclusive radio offer. Call 800-994-0805, and we will rush you a free one-month supply. Again, call 800-994-0805. That's 800-994-0805 for your free 30-day supply. Call 800-994-0805 now.
Well, hello again. We're back with news and news in the headlines and legal news, of course. and of course, I'm still at this bad throat. As people who know me know, I handle family law matters. And once again, one of the issues is whether or not the case is Zoe versus Zoe. It's not approved for publication. But this shows you how far parents will go to make another parent look bad. And what happened in this case is during an ongoing contested litigation over physical custody of the party's 11-year-old daughter. The father contended that the mother abused her parental discretion and made an age-inappropriate decision by taking the child to a rock concert. And the rock concert was performed by the singer Pink. And in this case, this was a trial judge decision by Judge Jones, and he held that post-divorce, each parent seeking or serving as a joint legal custodian generally has a right to exercise reasonable parent parental discretion over a child's activities while the child is in that parent's physical care. And that should be free from unreasonable interference or infringement, obstruction, or attempted control by the other parent. So he found that each parent had a constitutional right, in this case, to exercise reasonable parental discretion in introducing and exposing the child to works and performances of the creative arts. Now, he said that the court would generally not interfere with either parent's freedom of personal discretion on an issue, or hold same as evidence of improper or inferior parenting skills in custody litigation. Now, of course, if the evidence reflected that the artistic work or performance was so objectively age inappropriate that no reasonable person would rationally disagree. However, in this case, the mother's decision to take the child to the concert was not objectively inappropriate or an abuse of parental discretion. And therefore, he would not make any negative interference against her in the ongoing custody litigation. So this is, in other words, parents can reasonably make decisions. Now, I'm sure that, there are certain things that would not meet the test because anyone, or probably 99% of the population, would say that it was age inappropriate. Interesting, obviously, if you took even a baby to a concert, I guess the argument would be that the baby wouldn't know what he or she was hearing or seeing, so it would not be age inappropriate. But certainly, parents, this to me is a typical case where these parents are fighting about everything and they're both trying to take, or in this case, the father was trying to control what the mother decided to do with the child. And there are probably other instances where she did the same thing. But in any event, that shows the difficulty in dealing with these cases when parents are so controlling and so, controlling an attempt to control the other person, or will pick on any little thing to make the other parent look like they're not exercising parenting in the best interest of the child. What else is happening? As I said, I guess I'm talking about some family law cases, and because those are the cases that have been have been in the news this week. Now there is a case, kayak.com, and the parties in a New Jersey federal suit over whether a travel search engine infringes a patent for quote-generated software, and are wrestling with a relatively new question in intellectual property law. And that is, when is a technology's function too abstract to obtain a patent? So, not something that most of us are concerned about, but it certainly is for people who are trying to get patents, and whether or not the function is just too abstract to issue a patent. Now, the New Jersey Supreme Court also heard arguments this past week over whether a medical malpractice carrier must provide the minimum of coverage for a physician being sued, even when he made false statements on his application for a policy. So obviously, insurance companies try to, if possible, they're going to try to get out of the policy. And in this case, the court has to look at whether or not the physician who is being sued made false statements on his application, which will enable the carrier to not have to provide the coverage. And so that is the issue in that case. I've already indicated that according to news reports, David Wildstein is going to plead guilty and probably did today, if in fact it was heard today. There's also a number of contract cases that for some people certainly are interesting. And I think the main thing that I would say to anyone really before they sign a contract, especially these contracts of adhesion, meaning that, you know, they're 20 pages long, it really is a good idea to have an attorney familiar with contract law and even more specifically the law in that area to look at the contract. Same thing with a property settlement agreement in family law. People need to have attorneys review them. Now, in family law, generally, both people have attorneys, but if they don't, if, for example, they simply go to a mediator, really is important to have an attorney review what was written up. Because even in situations where the mediator is an attorney, the mediator is not representing either one of the parties. And there could be something left out because the parties didn't think about negotiating. And an attorney should pick up whatever was left out in the negotiations. So let me see. There are a couple other things I wanted to bring up for today. I did mention whether a child in the car, and that is really very important. There's administrative law cases, but I doubt if that's that important or that interesting, at least. There was a case recently in family law where, although the final decision was that the defendant father owed a little more than $9,000, around $9,100, as his contribution to their children's college expenses. However, granted his former wife a motion for counsel fees of over $36,000. And this was brought to the appellate division, and the appellate division affirmed, finding that the trial judge questioned the former wife on her proofs. He ordered an audit. He elaborated on his decision as to why the payments would be credited against college costs. There was a hearing, and that the award of counsel fees was not an abuse of discretion, where the judge examined the party's financial circumstances and noted the plaintiff husband, former husband's, bad faith. And that is certainly bad faith if one party runs up the other party's counsel fees. And so that the trial judge in this case, which is pretty amazing that he would order that much, but he determined that the fees were fair and reasonable and found the plaintiff's arguments regarding the defendant's unclean hands were not supported by the record. And there was other issues in that case, but that is the most significant part. In family court, one party can be required to pay the other party's counsel fees. So that is an important thing to think about. In most cases, the loser does not pay counsel fees for the winner. But in family law, and certainly in domestic violence cases, generally in domestic violence cases, absent extreme circumstances, the person who files a domestic violence complaint, the victim or so-called victim, will never be responsible to pay counsel fees for the defendant. Even if the case is dismissed, it would be extremely rare. And that's pretty much built into the statute because they don't want victims to be worried about having to pay counsel fees. And I mentioned that before in this program. So let's see what else we have here. I don't know if I had mentioned before that a secretary in Essex County had a suit against a lawyer, who, and she was demoted. In any event, that case settled. Unfortunately, for litigants, the court, the New Jersey courts, have raised fees in almost everything. And of course, now they're hailing that because they raised about $10.5 million in the first 4 months. And what happened in this situation is the New Jersey judiciary was handed unprecedented power last year to raise court fees in order to pay for bail reform and other purposes. So it estimated that it would raise about $42 million in fees, actually $42.1 million in fees. And so in the first 4 months, it has, in fact, raised $10.5 million. And the process will, in fact, help the judiciary's budget. But, you know, is it fair? And the fees are really, for most people, they're really truly getting outrageous. And especially when you think about the taxes that we pay in New Jersey. But I believe that I had talked last week about the passengers were ordered out of a vehicle, and that was not upheld, was not appropriate. And so that can't just be forced to get out of your car unless there's a really valid reason. Now, also there was a case where, and I don't know why firms or attorneys or even other people estimate the cost of litigation. People always ask me that. And honestly, there's no way to estimate a case that you think could be complicated because there may be a lot of assets in a family case or other issues. If people work together, it doesn't have to be. I've had some of the cases that I've had that really the assets and the income, I won't say huge, but I don't know the other word to use for it, really substantial. And they've been settled because both parties are reasonable and they want to settle, and they realize that, frankly, they don't want to pay lawyers, they don't want to pay experts, they don't want to pay for the process, and they're settled with very little cost. On the other hand, any case that's tried is just going to be, you know, huge fees. I'm trying a case right now where there are going to be three psychologists testifying, probably two or three or maybe four physicians testifying, and this is a family law case, an accountant who's testified and will continue to testify. So just the experts alone, you know, the fees in this case are huge. There will probably be 20 trial days, maybe more. Everything is being litigated. And, you know, I'm trying it for my client, and the other client has two attorneys at all times dealing with the case, both in court and in other matters. So this is, you know, this is huge, of course. And the case I'm talking about, this ex-client struck out an attempt to claim that the attorney had charged him $90,000 in fees after allegedly estimating that the cost would be about $15,000, so that the client said that the claim amounted to fraud. And the appellate division in New Jersey, this was on April 16th, affirmed a $36,000 award, and that was the sum that was left unpaid in the representation. And so that was affirmed. They filed for fee recovery, and the it was awarded, and it was upheld, so that the fraud complaint was absolutely dismissed. Now, of course, attorneys, doctors, other professionals are subject to malpractice suits, and in this case, there is the New Jersey Appellate Division reinstated a legal malpractice suit against a Bergen County Superior Court judge, and this was stemming from a probate a probate case that the judge handled before being appointed to the bench. And so the actually the controversy over the lawsuit delayed the judge's appointment to the bench in 2009. But the judge is now sitting on the bench, and the malpractice case is going to be able to proceed, whether or not she's sitting on the bench, so that no one is immune. And there are valid malpractice cases, obviously, but the unfortunate thing is a lot of clients sue or threaten to sue if the attorney files for fees, fees that are legitimately earned. So there's a $1.6 million New Jersey asbestos verdict, and it involved cosmetic talc, and that was believed to be the first of its kind. And in it's a New Jersey case. It's been upheld on appeal, and in that case, a three-judge panel affirmed the award against a Plainfield-based talc supplier. And so that's a huge verdict, and it was in fact upheld. Now we have there's a vacancy in the U.S. District Court, and there's a civil and criminal litigator, John Michael Vasquez, has been nominated, and he's with the firm in Livingston. And, he's held also, in addition to private practice, he's held top leadership positions in the State Attorney General's office and in the U.S. Attorney's office. So he's going through the nomination process, which unfortunately can take much too long these days, but at least we have a judge who's been nominated. Now there's somebody has happy feeling. A New Jersey federal judge awarded $927,000 to a firm for its work on a case defending Volvo against a suit claiming the automaker's retractable child safety seats infringed on a patent. So another patent case here. But that was awarded to the defending attorneys. So there's also, remember there's a controversial proposed settlement in a state's environmental litigation with ExxonMobil over the Bayway refinery. And the New Jersey Assembly gave final legislative approval to a bill that would set aside at least half of any money recovered in an environmental settlement after the first $50 million for cleanup operations. So that, that's good news, as far as assuming that this is a much bigger award, then it's a good thing that this money is not just going back into the general treasury. It, in fact, is going to, set aside money. And hopefully that will go to other, cleanup projects. Now, there was, it's interesting that their tax, taxes, we never like to pay taxes, and it's easy to question real estate tax assessments. And this was a case where the plaintiff, it was the city of South Amboy, appealed the judgment of the Middlesex County Board of Taxation. And the Middlesex County Board of Taxation reduced the city's omitted assessments for tax years 2010 and 2011, placed upon the improvement of a two-family home owned by the defendants to zero. So what happened is the two-family home had been damaged by fire in 2005, and it was vacant until the defendants repaired and renovated the house in 2012. They received a certificate of occupancy in 2013, and the city contended that the building was improperly omitted from its tax lists when its value was placed at zero. And then the court found that this reason is not valid and not a valid basis to resort to the omitted assessment procedure. And they found that the city could have but did not file a regular appeal challenging the zero value placed on their relevant valuation dates. The court, because of its ruling, did not examine the evidence or credibility of the city's methodology or conclusion that the improvement value for each tax year, after the deduction for the costs. In any event, the court affirmed the Middlesex County Board their judgments and dismissed the city's complaint with prejudice. So that, it is interesting. What is the value, for example, of a home if you can't live in it? I mean, that's a legitimate question, and I think most people would question why, if a home could not be lived in, was considered uninhabitable because of damage, destruction, fire, why they should still pay taxes on the, what is supposed to be the fair market value. I suppose the other argument on the other side is, well, the land would still have some value and you could sell the property and somebody would pay something even if they had to destroy or do that. Excuse me a minute. I've got a phone call. Hello? This is Pat Smits. How are you, Bill Wolfson?
You're listening to 100inChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the 100in County Chamber of Commerce.
USA Headline News. I'm Kelly Sloan. Manslaughter, not rendering aid, and other charges have been filed against six Baltimore police officers in the death of Freddie Gray. Five are already in custody. Maryland State Attorney Marilyn Mosby held a news conference today.
Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@100in-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy 100in, buy local. Visit www.100inchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Okay, that's about it for the program, and we're going to play the news, and then I'll be back with the sports guys. But If you have suggestions for guests on this program, I am going to bring some people in, an attorney that we had to delay on franchises, and some franchise owners to talk about franchises, and that will be done in the next few weeks. And other than that, I think you're fairly brought up to date on legal news. So we'll be back after the news break.
USA Headline News. I'm Kelly Sloan. Manslaughter, not rendering aid, and other charges have been filed against six Baltimore police officers in the death of Freddie Gray. Five are already in custody. Maryland State Attorney Marilyn Mosby held a news conference today where she said Gray's death was a homicide.
Following transport from Baker Street, Mr. Gray suffered a severe and critical neck injury as a result of being handcuffed, shackled by his feet, and unrestrained inside of the BPD wagon.
Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake says she will not tolerate unacceptable behavior by police.
To those of you who wish to engage in brutality, misconduct, racism, and corruption, let me be clear. There is no place in the Baltimore City Police Department for you.
People in the Baltimore neighborhood where Gray lived are celebrating by cheering and honking horns. Law enforcement officials are on high alert as more protests are expected. This is USA Headline News.
I'm a carbon fiber 29er full suspension mountain bike. My owner and I are attached to the hip, literally. Or we were, until the apartment got robbed while he was at his vinyasa yoga class, and the burglar used me to make his getaway. My owner's gonna be uber bummed when he realizes I'm gone. I guess he'll have to find another way to get his daily dose of adrenaline. Maybe he can take up urban beekeeping.
Your stuff can't protect itself. That's why the Geico Insurance Agency helps make it easy to switch and save on renter's insurance. Renter's insurance will cover personal property loss or damage as well as provide liability protection. Visit geico.com today.
Would you wait several days for your shower to get hot? Would you wait several days to feel the full effect of relief from your nasal congestion? FloNase Allergy Relief Nasal Spray could take that long. But if you're congested now and you want powerful relief now, use Afrin No Drip. Afrin starts working in seconds and keeps working for 12 hours. So why wait several days to feel the full effect? You can start to get relief in seconds with Afrin. Afrin, powerful congestion relief without the wait. Use as directed.
The rescue is still on in Nepal for survivors of Saturday's earthquake. Two people were rescued yesterday. Humanitarian groups are providing food, water, medical aid, and other items, but they are having trouble getting to remote areas, according to the UN head of humanitarian aid, Valerie Amos.
It's not been possible to land helicopters because of the landslides in some areas, but because in some other areas there simply is nowhere to land the helicopter. The village is on a ridge.
More than 5,000 people have died and 2.8 million have been displaced. The military is putting a big focus on fighting sex crimes, but a troop survey show it needs to get better. Defense Secretary Ash Carter says some 22% of active duty women and 7% of men have experienced sexual harassment last year.
I'm directing that we develop a DOD-wide comprehensive strategy to prevent retaliation against service members who report or intervene on behalf of victims of sexual assault.
This is USA Headline News.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-479-2697. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-479-2697.
Lawmakers want information about police officers forgetting guns in bathrooms of the Capitol complex. AP correspondent Jerry Bodlander reports.
Not once, not twice, but three times so far this year, the Capitol Hill police have left their guns in bathrooms. The newspaper Roll Call, which was the first to report the incidents, said one of the guns was found by a young child, the other two by workers. The chairman of the House Administration Committee, Candace Miller, and the top Democrat issued a statement calling the incidents unacceptable and extremely concerning. A spokeswoman for the Capitol Police said the incidents are taken very seriously and officers are held accountable for their actions. Jerry Bodlander, Capitol Hill.
The U.S. Navy has accompanied four American-flagged ships moving through the Strait of Hormuz at the mouth of the Persian Gulf and may expand that aid to other nations to ensure they get no interference from Iranian vessels. Those ships have civilian crews and are used to carry cargo or resupply U.S. Navy ships. Air Force Colonel Pat Ryder says any U.S.-flagged ship can ask for Navy warships to accompany it through the narrow strait. The policy was adopted after Iran Revolutionary Guard Corps Navy vessels reportedly fired warning shots near a Marshall Islands-flagged cargo.